This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Continue with Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Seahawks have wrapped up practice for the day. Pete Carroll out there speaking with the media, a bunch of players, DK Metcalf signing autographs. We just saw a really cool scene over here. We're right behind the fence where players will come up to people hanging over the fence looking for autographs.
Yep.
And there was a little kid over there in a Metcalf jersey that looks he's got something happening with his legs. He's got crutches. And you know, so something's going on, little guy, and DK stepped over the fence, and then they got down head-to-head and did a push-up competition.
And I think DK got whooped.
I think DK lost. That kid was, he kept going. I mean, in all sincerity, I was like, wow, he looks like he weighs like maybe 50, 60 pounds or something, and he pushed out 20 of them, I think, at least. And, yeah. And that was really cool, though. That yeah. Very, very cool to see DK just step over the fence. And do something like that. I thought that was really, really cool.
Well, and DK's the kind of guy that would do that if nobody was watching. You know, it didn't have anything to do with that. And right now he's signing autographs. Said this before. I mean, that's the kind of guy that you can pay a lot of money to. Because he's not going to let it go to his head. And, you know, that was genuine. And it was really cool for us to be able to see that. Because maybe 50 people saw that. But, yeah, you don't get to see that kind of that side of, you know, athletes just in general, and especially a guy like DK Metcalf, and that was cool to see.
Yeah, that was very, very good. That was moving. I was like,
and he was totally into it. You know, he's looking at the kid going, how many of you guys?
He's like, you got to slow down. You got to slow down. Yeah, everybody's cheering. And yeah, what a cool scene that was, though. So any thoughts as to what kind of guy DK Metcalf is? There's a little insight into him. So practice wrapped up for the day. Bob Condotta out there tweeting on Twitter, you know, in his hoodie. He's tweeting on Twitter. Some of his observations and feeling like, you know, Drew Lock struggled. He went with the ones today. Now, I think Pete just said that he will start game two of the preseason against the Bears, and that was always the plan. So it will be, which I think it's, you know, regardless of what they're seeing here, I think you got to do that. Don't you at least own that? Like, hey, if you're going to tell me it's a competition, then shouldn't it be an even playing field? Like, everybody's getting the same turn, everybody's getting the same reps with the ones and all of that. And it sounds like that's exactly how it's going to go.
Yeah. Well, and then also, you know, on the other side of the ball, you're more likely to get more starters when you're opening up, you know, because the ones are out on defense as well. So, yeah, that totally sounds right. Sounds like it wasn't a great day for Drew. I'm trying to remember. We thought that we saw Geno throw an interception, that one that we were talking about.
Yeah.
That Woolen got, and I think Bob said it was Drew.
I think it was Geno. Maybe there were more than one that was thrown. I don't know.
I'm going to go with Condotta. I think Condotta.
He's got heat stroke. He's running around in a hoodie in the sun, for God's sakes.
Well, he had a better view down there, but they were both kind of standing back there, so you couldn't really tell which one. And then Geno came in and completed a really nice deep throw, and I can't remember who the receiver was, but hopefully it was Arthiga Whiteside, because he's over there talking to the media right now. But, it's pretty even. I mean, really, you look at the game the other day, you look at the practices, and neither one has looked terrible, I'll say that. But, you know, we'll see what happens when you get into, you know, competition. You're playing the Denver Broncos in the first game. So, yeah, it's just still very much up in the air. I think it's one of those stories, though, that's kind of – the reason why you've got the berm almost full, because, you know, the first week of practice, there was maybe 40% of the fans out here at practice that we've seen in the past, and today was pretty close to full.
Yeah, this was the most attended day, I think, since we've been out here.
Yeah.
I don't know about some of the practices where we weren't, but
it looked like last year.
Yeah.
Basically. So, yeah, I think that's very topical for people. You know, the quarterback battle is probably going to go on. We'll see what happens with Locke, but I mean, even let's say Drew Locke, what if it's like a kind of performance that's sort of like it was last week, you know, that it's pretty close? I guess you go with the veteran, you go with the guy that's been here, and the guy that probably most players on this team know, and that's Geno.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it comes with a level of trust because he's been in the building, he's been with the system, the players know him, and if it's, you know, hey, this is an even competition in our eyes, I would assume they would lean that way. Just, hey, we know what we're going to get out of this guy. We've seen him, you know, year in, year out. We saw him when he had to step in for Russell after the injury. Drew's more of an unknown. You know, I keep hearing, you know, it's early, he's got to learn. I'm like, okay, at what point does that, is that not a thing anymore? Yep. Again, he didn't get signed in the middle of training camp. He didn't get signed in the middle of OTAs even. He was signed before that, or the trade, I should say, happened before that. He's had the playbook. He's had the conversations. Yeah. He's had the mini camps, the OTAs, and now training camp. So I don't look at it. I think certainly it's a benefit for Geno, just familiarity. That will always be a benefit. But in terms of Drew knowing the system and knowing the guys and everything, I just feel like that's kind of, that should be second nature right now, shouldn't it?
Yeah, well, and also it's not like he's a rookie.
Yeah,
this is his fourth season, so yeah, I think it's there's not that excuse anymore, definitely not. But you know, Geno more familiar, I guess, with the players, more familiar with the building. He did get last year with Shane Waldron, so maybe a little bit of an edge there. I mean, going into your second year running an offense that's probably tweaked a little bit from last year, but still pretty much basically the same terminology, that gives him a little bit of an edge. And I think if it's even close to being, I mean, this is given we see the kind of performance that we saw against Pittsburgh, where they're both right there as far as completion percentage goes. You know, neither threw an interception, right? Or was it just the
in
fumble?
The game?
Yeah.
No.
I remember.
So, no.
Yeah,
two touchdown passes for Locke.
Yeah.
Geno ran one in.
Should have been three for Drew, because Kobe Parkinson probably should have had that one. But yeah, I mean, if it's anything like that, then I would think they would go with, they would go with Geno.
Is there any part of you that believes that either one of these guys would be the long-term answer? I feel like we're just talking about the guy for now, and that's doesn't mean they can't. Doesn't mean one of them doesn't just all of a sudden find his stride and, hey, now I've gotten an opportunity that I hadn't had previously, even though Geno was a starter in New York. And Drew was given an opportunity in Denver. So they both had opportunities, but maybe they just find something here and become the man, so to speak? Or do you feel like, well, we're just, it's a battle of who's going to hold the spot until they find their guy?
Well, I guess maybe this isn't right, but I feel like it's more likely that it would be Drew Locke just because he's younger. I feel like Geno, you know, he's had opportunities to start, and what Drew Locke had was an opportunity in Denver, and it was just a different coaching staff, and maybe he wasn't getting the same support and things like that. So I feel like there's a possibility that Drew can be, but I don't think there's a possibility Geno, because he's been on, what, three different teams, and, you know, was it Giants, Jets, and here, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's kind of had his shot. It really hasn't shown, and I think there's a lot less that we know about Drew Locke, and that, you know, I think that there's a chance that he becomes that guy. But if not, yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be a good draft next year,
yeah,
as far as quarterbacks go.
Yeah, I just, that's kind of where I'm at. Listen, I would hope it would be great if you had your answer on your roster. That would be awesome. But we've talked about it, and we've talked about the mistakes every franchise has made with draft picks, trying to find the guy, and how many teams truly have the guy versus just somebody holding the spot.
Yeah.
And it's a rare commodity to have a franchise quarterback. It really is. If you look at each and every team, yeah, you've got guys that are the starters, but guys you look at and say, there's no question about it, that is the man for years to come. Those are very few and far between. So I root for both of these guys, one of these guys to become that. I'm kind of approaching this with, all right, this is a battle for now. This isn't a battle for the long future. This is the immediate future when looking at these two guys. And Pete Carroll talked about it just on terms of how they're going to handle the competition and split up the reps and everything, and cut number eight, just talking about, you know, making sure both of these guys get the equal time with the starters out there.
We're trying to make sure that balances out, you know, just so that the evaluations, you know, are evenly set. It's going to take us a bit to get that done, but we're we're on it. This week is a big week. I don't know if you could tell this, you know, in today. We did a lot of switching and changing to make sure that everybody's getting to work with everybody. So it's a factor, you know, and I want to make sure that we're really clear on it. So it's worked out a little heavier in Geno's favor to get those guys their work so far. But we'll pick up on as we're going, and you know, I'm real aware of that. I want to make sure that that's not a factor, and, you know, that it's out of balance.
Pete was listening to the show, clearly, and was listening to the concerns of Bob Stelton. But no, I mean, he's very considerate. He addressed exactly what you were talking about yesterday, and that's that, you know, you want to get not only out there against the number one defense, but you want to get to work with the one. So, you know, and I'm just thinking, okay, Colby Parkinson, I know he's supposed to be like a really good, you know, red zone threat, but if that's Will Dissly or Noah Fant, you know,
maybe they come down with that ball.
You know, so there's another touchdown for Drew Locke. So,
or yeah. Arthego Whiteside.
Yep, exactly. So he's a Stanford guy.
He is.
By the
does that mean he's a little bit better? Just a little bit sharper than the rest?
No, I just want to make sure he's got speed and toughness.
Okay.
Because sometimes there was an institutional lack of those two things at Stanford University.
Lack of speed and toughness?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not necessarily toughness, but like, you know, do you want to be a rocket scientist or a football player?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And I chose football player, the opposite of rocket scientist.
You were considering rocket scientist, and you finally said, all right, football.
There you go.
I really want to be a rocket scientist, but football is going to win out in this case.
And I enrolled in communication classes. And here
you are communicating.
One of the few people that went to college that actually put my degree to use. Never thought it would happen.
It is amazing how many people I talk to. Hey, what'd you get your degree in? Oh, it's European history or something.
Danny was history. Danny O'Neill. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're doing what now? Oh, I'm in sales.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. Okay, and not there's anything wrong with sales. It's,
no,
just,
no, it's just
nothing pertaining to the degree.
Exactly.
It's very, very common these days. So Thursday, you'll see a different quarterback getting the start. Drew Locke will get the start for your Seattle Seahawks, so we'll see how he looks. The only home game of the preseason, because then you'll head to Dallas in the final game. Are you more excited about going to Dallas than you were Pittsburgh?
Yes, just a little bit. I think it's just a little bit shorter flight, and we'll see if I'm allowed on the team plane. But
you might be.
Hey, look, you know what? When you fly with the team, you get so spoiled. I don't know if I've probably told this story 50 times, but, you know, you go through security here. There's no checkpoint two.
Yeah.
Like
you just board the plane once you get to the airport.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, then you get on the bus, and I always feel bad because you've been on 405 by the Kennedale Hill.
Yes.
It's really bad. They go out and shut it down. And a lot of times it's like rush hour. The cops go out there, shut the whole thing down, and then, you know, the buses zip right on, but that creates like a ripple effect.
Yeah.
But probably jams it all the way back up to 90.
And then I'm back there in the very back of the line on my motorcycle and all the gear sweating to death,
yeah.
Cursing you.
And you're going, yeah, oh, as long as the Seahawks get to the airport on time.
Don't miss your flight, boys. Yeah. I'll sit here and, suffer heat stroke.
Yeah. So
yeah.
And then you roll up to, you go through out on the tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go through the airport.
You don't mingle with the common unwashed.
Exactly. Right onto the plane, and then you get a first-class meal. You get a seat next to you that's open. And then you get on the other side. There's another police escort waiting for you.
Jeez.
You zip off the bus. They got a table with all the keys on there, alphabetical order. Rabel has a hard time with that sometimes. And then, you know, you get your key, and you're right up into the room, man.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, so you get spoiled. And it's not like my trip to Pittsburgh was so horrible and terrible. Well, it was pretty bad. But, it's like compared to that, you get spoiled.
Having to share a row with some big lug next to you, rubbing elbows and butts hitting you in the aisle and drink carts hitting you in the aisle. I mean, yeah.
So nothing bad happened to me on my trip to Pittsburgh. It's just that I'm terribly spoiled.
You are spoiled.
Yeah.
That'd be a police escort. I would like to have that one day. That'd be fun.
That means you're really a big shot.
Or I'm going to jail, one or the other. So, meanwhile, just looking at the Mariners, they got another gem out of Luis Castillo. I can't imagine if somebody out there who's listening was unhappy with this trade. Have your feelings changed? If you were somebody who looked at this and go, why did you make a trade for this guy for whatever reason, whatever your reasons were, have you been swayed the other way? Because he's been outstanding. He has been outstanding in his three starts, two of them against the Yankees. And then last night, you know, he goes six innings, six hits, two earned runs, another quality start, nine strikeouts, one walk. I mean, he's been very, very good for this team. And at a point where, again, we're talking about some guys that are kind of coming back to the pack, if you will. You know, Marco in his last six starts, four of them, at least five earned runs.
Yeah.
At least in four of those. You know, we talk about the hard hit rate with Logan Gilbert. Doesn't feel quite as dominant. Even George Kirby, who we spoke to earlier in the show, in case you missed that will be available on the podcast page after the show. But talk to him about, you know, hey, they're really monitoring your innings. How are you feeling physically? And he even said, well, I've lost a little bit of my velo at this point. But, you know, so fatigue is setting in on some level with these guys. We saw Penn Murphy give up runs. We saw Brash give up a couple runs. So maybe, you know, we're down the home stretch, 45 games, whatever it is left to go. Having somebody like Castillo come in is it can rejuvenate you and also take some of the pressure off the other starters, the bullpen, and the offense.
Yeah, well, and, you know, he outduels Otani last night. I mean, that was a great pitching matchup. But, you know, by the way, Kirby, before we get to Luis Castillo, that's a ridiculously low number of walks. Either one or zero. So he's had, what, 15 outings, I think, and 12 walks.
Yeah, he's to me, that's the most – he's got great stuff, but that is the thing I'm most impressed about is his command. He's got ridiculous command for a guy who's in his rookie season facing big league hitters for the very first time, and to have that kind of command working with some of the umps that this, we've talked about this season and, you know, questionable strike zones, what have you. For him to eat in days where he didn't have his best stuff, he still is not killing himself by you know, filling up the base paths with free passes there.
I feel like since Carlos Santana talked the home plate umpire into 3-1, that we're all square.
Yeah.
We're all square with the umpires because, you know, they say the bad calls go, you know, both ways. But that one was pretty savvy.
So weird.
Well, I honestly don't think Santana was trying to get over on him. I just think it was very unclear. I think it was the third pitch that I think he called a ball that looked like he called a strike.
Right.
For some reason. So, yeah, by the way, yeah.
That just fit the game, though, didn't it? The way the ninth inning went and everything.
Totally.
Just that was the beginning of the chaos and odd nature of how things went with guys falling down and nobody covering home and errant throw into center field. I mean, it was just, what is happening here? What are we watching? But luckily, that was all on one side. That was all the Angels doing.
I know, yeah. And then, you know, then Carlos talks him into and then they pinch run for him, and you get Demo. Demo ends up knocking the ball out of the catcher a couple of plays later. So, yeah, but Luis Castillo, I think that little he's got like a little tail on his fastball at the end.
He's got a lot of movement.
Incredibly impressive. And, yeah, this is his – I don't know anybody that wasn't excited about it at the time, but sometimes, you know, you make a trade like that and you know, maybe the guy isn't as advertised, and he has been fantastic.
Scott Servais talking about Castillo after last night's game.
You know, starting back at the beginning, Luis Castillo, what can you say? Outstanding again tonight. Maybe help him out as much defensively as I would have liked us to. Certainly the first run he gave up, we helped with the home run there. But he was awesome. Again, you know, the strikeouts, getting the ground balls, keeping us right in the game.
Helped out with the home run ball. Talking about Haniger and Julio banging into each other in the outfield. And it's funny to see that. It's not funny as a Mariner fan at the time. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Bleepity, bleepity, bleepity. But you look back at it and you see Julio looking at his glove like, wait, where the hell did the ball go? You know, looking around, they're trying to figure out, did that go over the fence? What, did that go over the yellow line? I mean, it just, you just talk about two extremes. It's either, you know, it was in his mitt, thought he had it. No, it's not only not in your mitt, it's a home run.
Yeah.
Bouncing out of your mitt.
I think the best guess there is that maybe Julio, because he's a rookie, nothing wrong, love Julio, but maybe he didn't call out loud enough, the call. Didn't
Why do you hate
loud
him?
Enough. I'm not taking sides. I'm not saying he did anything wrong. It's just that, you know, that's Mitch Haniger. I mean, come on. He knows that the center fielder is in control.
Right.
I feel like maybe it was loud there. I don't know. But
yeah, it was hard to tell. The replay, it didn't look like Julio was saying anything, but maybe he was yelling before the replay. We saw the replay, but it just looked like they were both tracking it and had no idea the other one was right there, clearly, because they're both watching the ball.
But don't you think that's what happened, though? I mean, it's either Mitch didn't hear it, maybe that was on him, or, you know, I guess if I'm going to say who probably screwed up there, the rookie, you know? I mean, he's been fantastic as a rookie, but, you know, you got to make that call.
Yeah, and that's something we saw early in the season, remember him and was it Winker? Where they kind of – you saw kind of a little chat with each other, when there was some miscommunication, and
which is fine. Like if that's his only rookie moment, I mean, he's He's been so good. So yeah, it's not like it's like I'm complaining about it.
Yeah, he's been fantastic, and luckily it didn't hurt him in the end because they win the game. So yeah. Now you can look back at it and laugh and celebrate the moment in the clubhouse where they were hugging each other. He was giving him a hug, and they were smiling and all that good stuff. All right, coming up, it's going to be a frantic race to the finish for the Mariners. We're going to dive into the playoff push that is in front of them. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center where the Seahawks have wrapped things up for the day. Now it's Dave's favorite part of the day where the grounds crew really go to work out here. The one thing is disappointing, though, in our time here, I've not seen you talking to them, getting tips, getting some guidance on lawn care.
Well, I got to get mine just up to the basic standard. Right now, Bob, I'm trying to keep the dogs off my lawn. I do have the hillbilly fence back up.
And that is going to remain up?
Well, we're going to see. It's kind of like, you know, the mask mandate, you know. If things flare up, then, you know.
You'll wait for guidance?
Yeah. So that's what I'm waiting for right now. And
how long does it take you to put that up?
About 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. So this, I mean, it's really a nothing process.
Because I just roll it up, and then, you know, it's got the stakes all in it, and I put it off the side. And then, you know, when you go to put it back up, it's just a matter of jabbing about, I don't know, 15 stakes into the ground.
And then I just picture you out there doing that with satisfaction, and Shannon's looking out in the window going,
yeah,
dang it.
Yeah. Well, and especially if she has, like, friends over. She's like, that's coming down. Before my friends get here.
She doesn't love the hillbilly fence, huh?
No.
That's so good.
But you know what? My lawns never look better.
Yeah, really.
And finally, I got all the dog pee stains or, you know, brown spots are cleared
up. The
burn
marks.
Yeah, I put down the seed, you know, a little bit of seed. It's all growing up right now. So
you're feeling good about how things are looking?
Yeah, but I know the second I take that damn thing down, I'm going to go out there and there's going to be a pile on my front lawn.
There's going to be a pile and a burn spot right next to it. That's so good.
Like I said, somebody was texting in about the automatic sprinkler.
Yeah.
With the sensor. People would much rather hear about this than the playoffs, right?
For the Mariners. Of course. Yeah. Yeah, much more interesting.
Yeah, so $55, I think, at Costco or something. So, but, you know, we got lots of children in our neighborhood. And
well, it's summertime. They don't mind getting squirted by water. You know what would happen is they're going to end up gathering around your house and running in front of it.
Yeah.
They're all going to be using it as a toy to cool off in the heat.
And I'm going to have to put something up that's anti-kid.
Me.
Get off my lawn.
Just have me stand out in front of there. Get out of here.
Throw water.
Sticky little thing. Go on. meanwhile, Mariners, as we sit right now, are atop the wild card standings.
That?
How about that?
How good does that feel? To pull open that page and look at that they're in first.
It's great. They're a half game up, though. It's very tenuous, Dave. It changes nightly. that's what makes this fun is just seeing how it shifts every night based on what the Orioles did, what the Rays did, what did the Blue Jays do. You're keeping an eye on the Twins and the White Sox and even the Red Sox. So it's just all these teams bunched up and jockeying for position. But as it sits right now, Mariners at 63-54, half game up on the Jays. And the Rays, who are both 61-53, so they are tied now.
I'm looking at Tampa. They have 6 games against Houston and 8 games against the Yankees. So, I mean, that they have the fourth toughest schedule. And Tampa Bay is one that's close. They also play the Guardians and Toronto for 9. So, and then, you know, you go look at Baltimore, which I don't know. Can they sustain this?
I keep waiting for them to become the Orioles.
I know.
They've got no payroll. They traded Trey Mancini away. They traded another guy. I always forget his name. But they didn't look to be, like, trying to compete. He came in with a terrible, you know, the second lowest payroll. It was them and the A's for 29th and 30th. And I can't remember who occupied which spot. But you know, this is a team you certainly didn't expect to be in contention. And then when they kind of got close to contention, you were sort of like, oh, yeah, that's cute. They'll fade.
Yeah.
Well, not yet. Not yet, because they're sitting right there. They are a game and a half out of the final spot. You got the Twins, who are 2 games out. The White Sox are 2 games out. And I think the Red Sox are, what, around 4 or 4.5 at this point? So, I mean, I know their season's been disappointing, but they are hovering and they are underachieving. So you feel like they're capable of a run. I don't know. I love watching. I love looking at the scores of these other teams to see what they did. I'm wondering, are we alone in that? Do you think the listeners can text in? Text in, are you scoreboard watching? Are you paying attention to the Orioles, the Blue Jays, the Twins, the White Sox, all these teams that are bunched up around the Mariners, or is that just us?
Absolutely, I am. The only problem is, like, who do you root for in some of these situations? Because you got, as far as toughest schedule, I mentioned that Tampa's number four, but then it goes the other three competitors that are in the, well, I don't know, is Boston in the runs still?
They're like
bit?
Four and a half. I mean, they're right there. You've got more than enough games to where they could certainly find their way in there.
Yeah, but you look at Baltimore, Toronto, and Boston are 10, 11, 12 as far as difficulty of schedule. They both, you know, they got to play the Yankees, the Phillies, you know, Tampa. So hopefully those guys, you know, you don't want one being too dominant.
You
hope they just beat each other up. But, yeah, it's fun to – I mean, who wouldn't love this? It's August, and we're scoreboard watching for the playoffs. So, and they're actually in the playoffs as of right now. So – it's just incredibly exciting. It's just a matter of, you know, how did the Mariners take care of these games against the Angels and Oakland?
Yeah, this is where you got to make it count. By the way, the text line, for those of you that aren't aware, we have a new text number. That number is 866-979-3776. Again, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And are you guys – all of you out there, any of you out there scoreboard watching, looking at, oh, what did the Rays do tonight? What did the Jays do? What did the Red Sox do? Because that, to me, is a big part. The most fun is watching the Mariners, watching them win, seeing them atop those standings. But it's kind of fun to be somewhat invested in the outcomes of these other games that aren't connected to the Mariners technically, but just in the race they are. So they take on a different level of importance to where any other season you're going, what did the Orioles do tonight? You're being like, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what the Orioles did? Who cares what the Jays did?
253 says, I'm scoreboard watching every day now. But, you know, the one thing about that is it can be really discouraging when you see, you know, the Mariners drop a game, and especially after losing the series to Texas, and then you look at, you know, whether it's the Orioles or, you know, the Blue Jays, whatever, they beat up on somebody. So it can be a little discouraging. But I like the day-by-day drama.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I feel great. Oh, I feel terrible. Yeah. Just ride it.
We're on a roller coaster, man. Yeah. This is the opposite of the beginning of the year where we're always talking about, all right, pace yourself because it's a long season. It's, yeah, you're excited at the very beginning and it feels like, oh, they lost that series. Oh, that stinks. And you're mad. You're like, oh, yeah, there's 162 games. Yeah. Well, now we're down to a precious few. We're down to, what, 45, I think, whatever that number is. I mean, mm-hmm. You just got a handful of games left and they go quickly. And you're looking at a part of the schedule you're expected to really capitalize on, and it got off to a poor start, and hopefully they can make it count, you know, even it out, because the idea going in, you had three game series, you had nine games on the road, take two of three out of each of those, mm-hmm. right? So you want to go 6-3 on a nine game road trip. They can still do that, obviously, you know, but that means you're going to sweep one of these teams.
Yeah.
Still hard to do. As much as we look at some of these teams and say, well, they should beat these guys. They're not very good. They're not playing for anything. Still big leaguers over there. You can lose at any night, as we saw against Texas, who are really playing for nothing. They fired their manager after they won the series. So, you know, you very easily can be beat. So it's easier said than done. But it would be nice if they could still come out of this road trip with six wins.
I don't know if you remember the movie Parenthood, where the old grandma says, some people like the merry-go-round, but it just goes round and round. I like the roller coaster. She's talking about life, basically. But
yeah,
I mean, I feel like, why not? Why not day by day live and die by the Mariners? And not only, you know, their wins and losses, but, you know, the other three or four teams that are in the hunt there.
Yep, it's been a lot of fun, and it'll be fun down to the final game. All right, coming up, is Russell Wilson already trying to undermine his coach in Denver? We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Russell Wilson already trying to lead a coup in Denver. No, not really. But he had a big sit-down interview with Peter King, and he said this time the players will be in charge of the offense to the Broncos.
I think the main thing that I've understood is that it's the investment into the players and the investment into the ownership of us owning our own offense, understanding that, you know, this has got to be a player-ran kind of team. You know, we got to run it ourselves, you know, and Coach Hackett gives us the keys to do that.
Owner's own, coach's coach, players play. That's how it goes.
Is he saying the onus and the responsibility is on them? Or I don't think he's saying, we're calling the plays. It's our offensive scheme. I take it as him saying, hey, this is on us. We're responsible for the results here.
Okay, you know what, Lefko? I hate to be a pain, but can you play it again? And I'm going to look at it from Bob's standpoint.
All right,
at his perspective.
I think the main thing that I've understood is that it's the investment into the players and the investment into the ownership of us owning our own offense, understanding that, you know, this has got to be a player-ran kind of team. You know, we got to run it ourselves, you know, and Coach Hackett gives us the keys to do that.
Yeah, I don't think he's saying we're calling the plays. It's up to us to determine we're going shotgun here. We're gonna roll out. We're gonna do this. No. To me, it's hey, we're responsible, and he's allowing us that latitude. This is on us.
You really love Russ, don't you?
I like him a lot more than a lot of people seem to these days. Yeah, all of a sudden he stinks, and they won in spite of him. It's the most mindless thing I've ever seen.
I think a lot of people are trying to justify their feelings of that.
Yeah,
you know,
the feelings are hurt.
Yeah,
yeah. So they want to qualify his success by saying, he was never really that good.
The only thing is to go along with that, you know, you hear these stories about him having his own office. I think building? I think he has his own office in the building.
Does he really?
And then, you know, I know that there were some things about, like, he had his massage chair set up in a certain room where he could watch film, which you can't fault him for that. He's watching film while he's getting a massage. Better than what other people do, but
yeah, some people have to have it written into their contract just to watch film, Dave.
Well, and there's that too. Yeah. I don't know. You kind of hear that kind of stuff. I don't know, Russ. I have to say that my experience personally with Russ was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know, he's buddies with Jake Heaps, who's one of the best dudes I know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And then, you know, I think Jake tweeted out something about his family at a Denver game, and he got all kinds of crap from these people. Just horrible things. Here he is with this cute little family, and you know, people are just going too far with that stuff. So yeah, I'm not going to buy into that whole hatred thing. I do think though that your typical fan is going to be booing Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, I expect
when he
that
comes here.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, there were a lot of mistakes by the Angels in the ninth inning last night. A lot of mistakes, and catcher Max Stassi took full responsibility.
There was a lot of going on that inning, and I thought it was 2-2, and he said it was 3-1, and yeah, he said it was 3-1.
So frustrating to get anything like that when so many things go wrong for
you. Yeah, horrible, you know. That loss is on me. It sucks. So it's just something that, yeah, I've never done that before in my career, and probably I'll never do it again. I just anticipated him going, and I was trying to just be quick to it, and, you know, he didn't even go, obviously.
He's talking about the throw into center field right there, right?
Yeah, so yeah. There was three things on him, right? I mean...
Well, yeah, the ball got knocked loose.
Ball gets knocked loose.
Throwing it into center field.
And then not being more adamant about the 2-2 thing, which I thought was 2-2. But, I mean, only the umpire would know, because it was like he said ball, but like you saw a fist movement or something.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't hear him, just like when we talked to Blowers, you can't hear him say ball or strike, so you're kind of just looking at his mannerisms back there. So Stassi he made mistakes, but he had help.
Yeah,
he had help out there. A pitcher didn't cover home on the rundown. You had the, who was the shortstop, fell down, got back up. I mean, it was just kind of a calamity out there, and everybody played. They were all complicit, Dave.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that, you know, the Mariners just took advantage of that. And like I said with Blowers, it seems like with, you know, when the Mariners get in those situations, like the rundown and the double steal, they always execute it perfectly, man. And they executed that. They were aggressive on the base pass. You couldn't have three, actually. You had Julio out there, but, you know, you got the speed with Demo and Swaggerty.
Sweeping the dial.
We know that in the third inning last night, Julio went yard on Shohei Ohtani. We know that. You know, it was a questionable fair or foul call, but luckily, because they won, Julio able to make light of it afterwards.
I know we all know the right answer. I know we all know the right answer. It's tough, but at the end of the day, we got to win, and that's all that matters.
We all know the right answer. He's right, and I don't know. Did you notice when we talked to Blowers about it, when I was saying, man, can't think with the technology's there. I mean, you know, we're technologically advanced enough to come up with something that could tell you fair or foul. And he agreed and said he wouldn't be surprised if we saw it by the playoffs. That would surprise me if they implemented something that quickly. Maybe they're already working on something. I don't know. But, man, it just seems like when you've got a game of consequence in the playoffs that could end a series for a team if you get that call wrong, that you want to get that right. This isn't so much instant replay as it is something that just is going to be absolute in sort of like the NFL and, again, the football, you know, breaking the plane of the goal line. Yeah. You need something like that.
I think they got to get on that, you know, especially – can you imagine if that happens in a playoff game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's too much on the line to have a guy just kind of leaning out there. And, yeah, I give the umps credit. They more often than not, by a long shot, are right. Mm-hmm. You know, the bang-bang plays at first, when you see the replay, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
They are really, really effective. So it's not a knock on them, but especially on the one where he hit over the foul pole, I'm like, how do you tell if that's fair or foul? I mean – you know, it's 20, 30 feet above the foul pole going out. It looks fair, but I guess it could be foul. And last night seemed fairly clear, but it certainly wasn't definite. But I'm looking at it going, well, the ball disappears. It doesn't disappear if it's going in front of the foul pole in foul territory. It was disappearing for that split second behind the foul pole. But, you know, I agree with Julio. We know what the right call was, but they won.
Hey, so. I've said today Swaggerty twice, and both times I get kind of like a disappointed look from you, like you don't like it.
No, I think it's lit. It's totally fire.
I experienced that earlier. Yeah, I respect this. This is lit.
Yeah, like the vibe.
You mean our radio
table
here? Our table?
You like our tent? Like the vibe. Yeah.
You don't like Ham Swaggerty?
I think it's fine. Whatever you, if he's cool with it, I'm cool with it.
Okay. I just felt like when I said it both times, I got a disapproving look from you, Bob.
I'm picturing the cartoon that I saw. Somebody sent me one on Twitter that was a big chunk of ham that had a baseball hat and a jersey on it. It said Ham Swaggerty. So
trying too hard.
That immediately comes to mind now when I hear that. All right. Coming up. It's always entertaining when we catch up with this man, the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us next as we continue live from Virginia Mason Athletic Center with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.